You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another fun-filled episode of the M Squared TechCast from right here at the PodcastDetroit.com studios in Royal Oak. How you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking, Matt. Now, I get next week, you're going to something about a kid getting married
or
something?
Yeah, I'm not going to be here next week. Mike's going to be flying solo. I will be en route to family nuptials. My eldest is getting married September 2nd in Rochester, Minnesota. So my wife and I are going to spend the week there beforehand getting to know the in-laws a little bit, the outlaws, and having some fun in the Twin Cities. So because Rochester's about an hour south of Minneapolis, St. Paul. So we're going to go to a University of Minnesota football game. We're going to hit the Minnesota State Fair, which is a gigantic big deal. We're going to have some fun.
And then the following week is Labor Day, and of course we'll be off. That's my last long weekend of the summer.
Yep.
Before we go hell-bent for leather come fall.
That's right.
You got to look at my schedule for the fall. So,
no thanks, I have a feeling.
Yes.
All right, well, we've got great guests for you today. Starting off the show is a great guest, to be sure, Kathleen Norton-Schock, who is with the Michigan Council of Women in Technology and another fine podcast you should also listen to called Diva Tech Talk. Kathleen, welcome.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Just great.
Congratulations, Matt. That's wonderful that your son's getting married.
Yes.
Although, gosh, I think I remember that he was a little boy not that long ago.
Yes. You and me both. All right. So tell us about the latest on Diva Tech Talk.
Yeah. So great. So Diva Tech Talk is doing well. We're swimming along as for your audience. Again, Diva Tech Talk is a three-year-old passion project. Founded by myself and Nicole Johnson Scheffler, approximately 1.5 times a month, depending upon the month. We publish a podcast, an interview of a notable woman in tech. And this coming, well, we just published in the end of July, Kanika Tolver, who is based out of D.C., worked in the Obama administration for a long time in various agencies inside our fabulous government, our federal government, broke free and is running her own consultancy now, is a tremendous role model for women of all ages, and at a very young age achieved a measure of success working in the federal government and then with her own consultancy. So I would advise that if anybody wants some inspiration, Kanika is out there. And then this coming week, we are publishing a podcast with a woman that I happen to have on a panel during Startup Week, Detroit Startup Week. I emceed a panel of six fantastic women entrepreneurs, women technology company entrepreneurs who had founded companies. And one of them, that podcast will be published this week. Her name is Lori McCall. She spent 15 years at PwC, having had an amazing athletic life. She went to college on a full scholarship for volleyball, first level one volleyball, and then went to get her MBA, then immediately began traveling the world for PwC as a consultant, had a number of amazing clients for, all the way from Fortune 500 to smaller companies. But then... just about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, decided to throw in all her chips and start her own company. And the name of that company, because she loves, even though she is she was born and brought up in Canada and went to school in Ohio, she loves Detroit, has always loved Detroit since she moved here a while back when she was working for PwC. And the name of her company is WHIM, W-H-I-M hyphen Detroit. And it is a consultancy based on a lot of her background. She calls it working in the future. But literally where she works with a number of companies to bring them the benefit of her wisdom and that of her team. And she's working in two areas she loves the most, which is athletics and fashion. So if you would like to know more about Lori, Diva Tech Talk will be publishing her story, as I said, on August 23rd at www.diva.tech.com. And if you'd like to just go directly to her website, it is www.wim-detroit.com. Some of her customers include the Detroit Athletic Club, as an example. And one of the things she did in sort of a record-breaking fashion is she hosted, along with some support from Rock Ventures and the Michigan, Pure Michigan, the Business Connect arm of Pure Michigan, she hosted the very first fashion hackathon just before I interviewed her this past spring. We've been holding her in our library to publish this summer. So I definitely advise that people sign in to Diva Tech Talk this Thursday. Or, of course, we already have 70 podcasts there. So if you haven't heard them before, feel free to sign in anytime. And speaking of Diva Tech Talk, and I'm going to segue rather gracefully, I hope, over to MCWT by doing this. Our co-founder, Nicole Scheffler, got a tremendous honor. We, as you guys know, and I think we talked in the last podcast, we podcasters, our fifth award, our fifth Clarion Award, but Nicole got an individual honor last week. She was named among the 26 notable information technology women in Michigan by a company we all know and love, a publication we all know and love, Cranes Detroit Business. Mm-hmm. So that was really amazing. I'm actually quoted in there as a reference to her, but we don't talk about Diva Tech Talk very much. We talk more about her daytime job at Cisco and her last three promotions and all the things she's been doing in her volunteer life, notably for the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. And if you guys read those awards, I, of course, helped nominate some of those people, so I feel a little proprietary about it. Of the 26 women who were named by Cranes last week as notable IT women for 2018, seven with Nicole, seven of them are intimately related to MCWT. Starting with one of the founders of MCWT, Rosemary Bayer, who happens to be my co-founder of a startup company that's 9 years old now. But Rosemary is not only one of the five co-founders of MCWT, the Michigan Council of Women in Technology, but the founder of the MCWT Foundation. So she was one of the women named, as was Amy Corder, who has a strong, long military background and is now living on the west side of the state as the CEO of Enotech. Tamara Faber-Doty, who is the Vice President of IT for Consumers Energy. Allison Gleason, who is MCWT's Women in Tech of the Year last year, is a Senior Vice President at Cisco. Jane Sidlowski, who is the founder and CEO of AMI Strategies, a 27-year-old software company.
She started
right here
it when
in
she
our
was,
region.
Yeah, she started it when she was a baby,
Yeah, you knew her when she was just a baby.
Yes, that's right.
And who, by the way, I hope I'm not letting anything out of the bag. She's the vice president right now of MCWT. And if you know anything about our succession planning, that means she will probably be leading MCWT in the year 2019, which is so well-deserved because she led our board for many years and has been instrumental on our board. And then last, but certainly not least, on that list of seven, Chris Rzewski, who has been was a longtime volunteer for MCWT, almost single-handedly in a team of three or four people raised much of our sponsorship money over a period of a decade, and now is our fourth paid executive director and is running MCWT administratively now as a paid employee, which for us, as you know, I've been a member for 16 years and we ran for almost 11 of those without any paid staff. And Chris is now our executive director and is responsible for the day-to-day operations of MCWT as we continue to grow and evolve, which is marvelous. And then speaking of fundraising, thank you guys, by the way, for coming. I know you showed up at our golf outing in July at my invitation and the invitation of the board. And that was a record-breaking golf outing for us. We raised $180,000 for our many programs, which, again, I mention again and again in the show, our summer camps, our website contests, our robotics grants, our all of our various programs, our mentoring program, et cetera, and our growth now into Western Michigan. So that was all. That's all been very exciting MCWT news. We have some upcoming events you might be interested in.
Sure,
on the
absolutely.
23rd, this coming Thursday, the same day Diva Tech Talk publishes its next podcast. In the evening, Ally Financial and MCWT is having one of our Connect Techs. And that will be at Ally's office in downtown Detroit. And anybody who'd like information about that, and go to our website, www.mcwt.org. And then before I forget, since we're talking about awards, this will be the fourth year in a row that MCWT is giving away, is trying to find one woman to give our MCWT Woman of the Year in Technology Award. And the deadline to either nominate yourself or someone else is coming up rather rapidly. The deadline for that application is September 10th. Anybody who would like to nominate someone can send the nomination to awards, AWARDS, at mcwt.org. And to qualify, the nominee just has to be a woman in Michigan who embodies our mission of inspiring and growing women in tech. The person typically would lead or has led significant positive change for women, either women working, teaching, or studying IT and computer-related careers. Last year, Allison Gleason, as I mentioned, was our nominee, and we'll be presenting the award to the lucky winner during a ceremony at our Black and White Ball, which is our biggest fundraiser of the year, and that will be taking place November 3rd at the Royal Park Hotel in Rochester. So I think I've packed a lot into that 12 minutes, but do you guys have any questions about either Diva Tech Talk or MCWT?
Well, you still got 2 minutes to work with, so what do you got? What else you got?
Okay. All righty. Well, we have one other event that I think anybody who is not yet a member of MCWT might be interested in putting this on their calendar. About two or three times a year, we have what we call New Member Welcome. And we invite, obviously, anybody who has joined in the last 6 to 9 months or the last year to come and join us. Because oftentimes you find people join, and then particularly if they're joining through their corporate membership, you know, we have 100 sponsors, and each one of them is part of the money that they contribute to our programs, has the opportunity to have anywhere from 6 to 25 women, depending upon the level of their sponsorship, become gratis members. Well, many of those people travel. They have pretty demanding careers, and they may not understand all the benefits of membership. So we have a new member welcome coming up on the 25th of September. I don't yet know the site, but if you go to our website in about a week or two, the venue for that will be set up. And if you are not a member, we still invite you to come to something like that to hear about membership benefits. A little percentage, if you're buying an individual membership, a percentage of your charge goes to our many programs to support girls and women, and obviously pay for a little bit of the overhead of the organization. And it's just fun to come because it's a great networking opportunity, as is the FinTech event we're having on the 23rd. But this would be September 25th, our new member welcome. And then, as I said, our big fundraiser of the year is occurring on November 3rd, and that's our Black and White Ball.
All right, Cassie.
And I don't know if that means you have to wear black and white, but I suspect it does.
Yes.
Okay. Well, tell us about how people can reach both MCWT for those nominations due September 10th for the Tech Woman of the Year. Also, how they can hear the podcasts in the Diva Tech Talk series.
Right. So for MCWT, you go to www.mcwt.org. In order to nominate someone for Woman of the Year, go to our programs link, and there's a list there, and you'll see it's under Early and Mid Late Career Woman of the Year. So you just touch that, and it'll take you immediately to a really great page that explains everything I've said, and there's a little link there where you can apply for the program. And then Diva Tech Talk is always accessible at www.mcwt.org. Diva, D-I-V-A, Tech, T-E-C-H, Talk, T-A-L-K, .com.
All right. Thanks very much, Kathleen Norton-Schock of Diva Tech Talk at the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. We'll be back in just a moment with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you are indeed listening to the M Squared TechCast here at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another fun-filled segment of the M Squared TechCast. We have here with us now a longtime friend of the show, someone who's made several appearances here. He is a cybersecurity expert, and his name is Dan Lohrmann. Dan, how you doing today?
I'm great, Matt. How you doing?
Good. Mike's here, too.
Yes, indeed.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah, and we have been exchanging emails trying to figure out what you're going to be talking about on this session. And you submitted an article to me that I read over very carefully. Talks about the cybersecurity talent brain drain, particularly at the FBI, because salaries and benefits are so much more lucrative in the private sector, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think you talk to CIOs, CISOs, chief information security officers around the country, public and private sector, they'll all tell you that the cyber talent gap is the number one thing, and kind of the going feeling is that, you know, if you get the right talent, they'll get the right tools. That's what you need. Is, you know, it's like in a sports team, you need talent, right? And I think that the focus of the article I sent you, which I know is highlighted on the MyTech News website, talks about, you know, the big news related to Duo Security and Tenable, two big companies, one that was acquired in the last month, and then one that was bought by Cisco was Duo, and then Tenable went public with an IPO in an initial public offering. And so just talking about how stock is now a new piece of that puzzle.
Yeah, we've got a whole lot of newly minted, well, not quite because the deal hasn't closed yet, but soon we'll have a whole lot of newly minted millionaires in Ann Arbor, led by Doug Sung. Of course, Doug didn't get hurt either when he was in another IPO or buyout. Do I remember Arbor Ventures, was it maybe?
Yeah, Arbor Networks.
Arbor's Networks, that's what it was, yeah. So I think Doug's doing quite well for himself.
Yeah, Doug's doing great, and John Oberheide, the other, you know, co-founder, did great. But I think, you know, a lot of people have the view also, guys, that it's just the top people. But really, one of the things I think that when the current, you know, stock market's overall doing well, it's, you know, been up and down a little bit this year, but overall, cybersecurity stocks are doing well. And a lot of people at these companies, it's not just the top people, that, you know, the CEO and the CFO and the CXO suite. But a lot of these employees get stock options. And so, you know, they're talking, the FBI article talked about, Politico did a big article saying 20 of the top cyber experts at FBI left, and sometimes they can double their salary by going to the private sector. It's, you've seen different pay scales, 40% difference between public and private sector, 50, 60% difference, depending on, you know, which study you look at and what part of the country. But I think the other piece of this is, you know, there are a lot of, there's hundreds of people at Tenable and a Duo that have stock options. So when, you know, when they get bought for, you know, over $2 billion, like you said, it's more than just the two people at the top. It's really a whole group of individuals that are now impacted by this in a positive way. And that's really for millennials, for a lot of the people who are going into the market. And I think it changes the equation somewhat.
So what do we do about that? I mean, obviously, if somebody can make more money, they're going to try to make more money. I mean, you worked in the public sector for a long time, but I think part of the reason that you left because you had a better offer. Was that not the case? Or
no, it is. And I certainly don't want to discourage anyone from – I mean, I just – you know, I don't want to say you know, anything bad about making money in the private sector or, you know, stock – making money on the stock market or options, or, you know, people should look at what's best for them. I think people need to weigh the pros and cons. I mean, I think one of the big things going on right now is, you know, we always kind of Monday morning quarterback, it's always easy, right? You know, to kind of see what's happened in the rearview mirror. I see this trend, you know, continuing going forward, but we never know, like, will there be a dot-com bubble burst in cybersecurity? I certainly don't think so. I'd love to hear your view on that, Mike and Matt. But, you know, I think this trend is continuing, and it may change, you know, the whole equation. More and more companies may have to outsource, more public sector, more governments may have to outsource more of their work to the private sector. I also think that you're going to see, you know, people, if this trend continues, we're going to be more people will be choosing that route of going the private sector route. And I think the challenge is that the public pay scales just can't keep up with the private sector during the times when, you know, the stock market is going straight up and people are getting stock options. It changes the equation, you know, and already there was a pay gap just based salaries and bonuses, but now it's even much, much, much bigger when you add in, you know, the stock aspect of this. And so, I mean, I think it could change the industry. It could change the amount of outsourcing. People don't like that O word. They talk about partnering or other things. But more and more private sector people working with public sector. And I think it really comes down to what will happen in the future. Is this trend going to continue? I mean, in the past, we've had, you know, the stock market burst in 2008. We had, you know, the bubble burst back in the dot-com bubble burst. If the stock market crashes, you know, then all of a sudden that changes the equation again.
Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of a bubble in cybersecurity, I do have to tell you, these are companies, you know, companies like Duo Security are companies with real revenue and I mean, real customers.
Yeah.
And a lot of the dot-com froth and silliness in the late 90s, these were companies that didn't really have customers or products or anything, really. I remember hearing once a CNBC analyst talking very seriously about how you couldn't look at price to earnings ratio anymore in a you know, internet stock. You had to look at price per eyeballs. And I'm like, okay, yeah, this is getting out of hand. So,
well, a lot of that back 20 years ago was all these folks that ran all these investment funds didn't know anything about IT. And so they would just pick whoever number one or number two was in particular sectors, and that's who they would back. They had no knowledge whatsoever. So a lot of that's changed.
Yeah, I think people are much more sophisticated about these things now. And like I said, Duo Security has some of the biggest companies in the world as its customers. So this is a very serious business, as we have all learned from
guys,
breaches.
I think the other piece of this that people, you know, listeners need to keep in mind is that as you're making initial decision, I've written a couple different articles about this over the last few years, that, I mean, I have no regrets about my years in public sector. I spent the majority of my time in the government, both at NSA and in Michigan State government, and you oftentimes will get more opportunities in the sense of, you know, maybe a diversity of different roles, whereas if you go right out of college into the private sector, they may, you know, almost stick you in one kind of stovepipe, which may or may not be good to learn that one skill set. But, you know, I almost think of it, I tell people, think of it like somebody's a lawyer. Do they go and become, you know, become a prosecutor and they're in the courtroom like right away? Or do they want to go for a law firm where they're going to make more money, but they may be, you know, not ever, you know, in front of a judge, in front of a jury in a court case, in front of live, you know, for years, because they have to kind of work their way up through the law firm to get to that point. In some ways, it's similar in the cyber world. You know, I think government jobs may offer more opportunities. You know, I started right out of college at NSA, and I got a lot of great experience, learned a lot of culture things. Now, granted, there were no cyber stocks like there are today, and so it is a different world. We're in a very different time now than we were, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. But I think public sector offers some great opportunities. But I think this really, if this continues, what we're seeing right now, this could be the beginning of a trend. We look back at the summer of 2018 and say that, wow, that was really a paradigm shift in the whole cybersecurity industry because of these examples like Tenable and Duo Security.
Yeah, there was a good article in VentureBeat last week. I don't know if you saw it. It was written by a guy who's with a Chicago angel investment group called the Hyde Park Angels. And the headline was, "The Midwest's best-kept secret is its vibrant cybersecurity community." And he was talking about Duo Security, and he was talking about, you know, their earlier work at Arbor Networks, Next Hop Technologies, Merit Network, you know, Deep Field Networks. You know, it's not just Detroit either. It's, you know, Chicago as well. So I thought it was a fascinating article because people, once again, they think this stuff only happens in Silicon Valley. And, you know, the Midwest has a pretty deep bench when it comes to cybersecurity.
So does that mean then that the government sector is going to have to start working even more closely with the private sector to deal with this talent gap?
I think so. I think that was kind of one of the things I kind of ended the article with, is that if this trend continues, if you really believe, and, you know, keep in mind that new people coming out, the best and the brightest, if you will, they are taking a risk because not every company ends up like Duo or Tenable, right? So, I mean, you know, a lot of it's like kind of like, you know, restaurants. How many, I don't know what the percentages are today, but how many restaurants fail? So not all these startup cybersecurity companies out there with 10 or 15 or 20 employees, whatever, are going to be another Duo Security. So there's no guarantees in the world. There is more risk reward there. But by and large, Mike, yeah, I think that you're going to see a lot more partnering with the private sector, probably. People don't like the word outsourcing, but more partnering with the private sector for security operations centers, for incident response, for a lot of these cybersecurity services. You're going to see the government rely a lot more on the private sector. I think that is a trend, and I think it's going to accelerate.
You don't think there's a possibility that some of these private sectors would be non-Americans, right? You don't think it'll ever come to that, do you?
Well, great point. I do think that some of that is a big issue. I mean, you've got that right now with a lot of questions. In a previous segment on this program, when we talked about Kaspersky and different companies around the world, and you got the Chinese companies buying American companies and European companies buying American companies and American companies buying European companies. And so it goes kind of full circle. And when you start talking about who's going to buy who next week, I think it's all on the table. And I do think, yeah, you're going to probably have some government, you know, eyebrows raised if all of a sudden, you know, what if a Chinese company wanted to buy Duo Security? Mm. Would that have happened? I don't know. I'm saying speculation, right? My gut is there's going to be, yes, some international companies trying to come in and buy U.S. cyber companies. You also have that right now with Israel. Israel's got a lot of great cybersecurity companies. I've been over to Israel and seen their cyber tech conference, and a lot of great startup companies that have led to, you know, companies that have been acquired by the U.S. And so, you know, I do think you're going to see international, you know, companies buying companies across borders.
All right, Dan, if people want to get a hold of you for more interesting talk on cybersecurity, how do they get a hold of you?
Thanks so much for asking, Matt. At GovCSO, that's GovCSO, and go to Lorman on Cybersecurity. That's my weekly blog.
All right. Thanks very much, Dan Lorman, cybersecurity expert and longtime friend of the show here at the M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back with another segment in just a moment. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
But first. Yes.
I have to find the script here. Sorry about that. We have a new sponsor here at the M Squared TechCast, all over podcastdetroit.com, as a matter of fact. We want to thank Audible, the audio book company, for this show. To start your free 30-day trial and receive a free audiobook, visit www.audible.com/Detroit, or you can text Detroit to 500-500. And I've been looking around on Audible myself and found a couple of interesting books. Last week we talked about one that was a more serious book about blockchain. This one just looks like pure fun. It is by Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is probably my favorite science writer right now. He has a way of expressing really complex scientific concepts.
The new Carl Sagan.
Yeah, the new Carl Sagan, right, exactly. He has a way of expressing really complex scientific concepts in a very simple way. And he has a new book out called Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. And aren't we all?
Yes.
Okay. Once again, thanks to Audible for this show. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
Yes, and we have calling in from Europe, Mele Astley, CEO of Smart Finds Marketing. Although his office here is in Birmingham, Michigan, he's actually overseas. And as a disclaimer, I am working with Mele on this particular project, so we're partners on it, so I want to get that out of the way. But I think it's a great project. He came to me with this idea about a year or so ago, and we've been playing around with it. We've got some test cases out there with a couple different auto dealers, but talk a little bit about it, Mele. Talk a little about what Smart One is and what it does.
Hey, guys. Good to be back on the show. I think you might remember a while back we had presented Smart One to everybody. It's one of our marketing programs for auto dealerships. Since we're in the Motor City, I think it's pertinent to have for a digital marketing agency that have tools available for the auto industry. Let me do a real quick recap here. So Smart One is a dealership local marketing solution. And I say solution only because we're combining six different marketing channels into a service that guarantees sales. Ideally, what we do based on the dealership's volume is that we can guarantee 20 car sales in 8 weeks through these six different marketing channels. Our goal is to reach an audience the dealership has not done business with in the past 5 years. So the way we work through that is we access the dealership's data management system, also known as the DMS system, and we access their CRM system where they have their customers. We use that information to scrub our database and say, okay, these are the people that we don't want to target or reach. And whatever is left over from our millions of people that we have in our database, we target based on geography, on zip code. We can help the dealership, quote unquote, cherry pick the geography they would like to reach. And then based on that, we go 8 weeks out using six different marketing channels to reach 20 car sales. Now, what's interesting is the fact that for the dealership, this is a good deal. If we get more than 20 car sales, then we're not asking for a commission. If we get less than 20 car sales, we give the dealership a refund on a per car basis of the number of sales we did not achieve. So if we got 15 cars instead of 20 that during those 8 weeks, then we give the dealership a refund of 5 cars. Mm-hmm. The program is OEM compliant, and we do help the dealership by promoting service appointments, which is not something that we necessarily are charging for or even ask for any type of commission on those types of revenues that they may gain from us. So that's a quick intro of recap of what Smart One is. Beyond that, we do have some case studies moving forward. For example, we had one case study out in Holland, Michigan. Instead of 20, you know, instead of being able to achieve 20 cars, we actually sold 61 cars in 8 weeks. 21 of those 61 were new cars and 40 were used cars. Not to mention, what was amazing is we had 200 service appointments that are somewhat attributable to our efforts. I don't know if that we can count all 200 service appointments, but those are definitely people that were not in their database prior to our program starting. So that was kind of an interesting situation.
10x return on investment.
I would say so, don't you?
Yes, I just did, in fact. So, yeah, we looked at the numbers, and then what we discovered working with auto dealers is, shall we say, a challenge. They challenge you on everything. You know, they claim that they have done things that maybe they didn't, but, you know, that's just part of the process, right?
Well, I think it's part of the nature of the beast. If you think about it from a car dealership standpoint, the OEM is running marketing and advertising programs. The regional section is running marketing and advertising programs. Then the dealership has their own programs in which we're part of that. So trying to help the dealership attribute where the sales are coming from is, of course, difficult from their perspective. Which is one reason why we scrub our database. You know, we take a look at the dealership's DMS system, we take a look at the dealership's CRM system, and make sure that we do not target what's already in the system when we start, so that anybody who shows up in the DMS or the CRM after we've started our program is a high probability that we can attribute it to our efforts.
The other issue we had was we scrubbed the list for 5 years, and well, let's see. I won't name names, but some of these dealers were saying, no, that was a customer from 11 years ago. And so we kind of arm wrestled over whether that was a real customer or our new customer. So, yeah, so those wacky and wild auto dealers, they're fun to play with. So we also did another study
in
Ann Arbor. Yes, fun to play with. Why don't we talk about our Ann Arbor study, too?
So in the Ann Arbor program, let's face it, there was a learning process. And one of the things that we learned in this case is that luxury cars are not a good fit for Smart One. And I'm not going to say that's 100% true, but certainly when we're dealing with the Cadillac models and the luxury brands at that level, perhaps Smart One is not ideal. And the reason it's not ideal is that we need the dealership to be selling anywhere from 60, 80, 100 cars a month already in order for Smart One to be able to assist them with 20 car sales. If the dealership's only doing 20 cars, it's not likely for Smart One to help them get 20 cars, you know, in addition to their existing program. So the luxury car side was interesting from that standpoint. Although I do think part of it is geography. I mean, let's take Mercedes dealerships in the Miami area. These guys are doing, you know, somewhere in the tune of 1,000 cars a month in sales in that geography, where we're not able to see that in the Detroit area or in the Midwest section. Perhaps certain geographies lend themselves better for luxury car sales than the Midwest, for example. But that was a part of the learning curve. It was a good thing.
And we also discovered that used cars sell better than the new cars. Probably pricing is a factor in that, right?
I would agree. We can take our 6 marketing channels and promote new and used cars as well as service appointments. However, let's face it, used cars have a better price point than new cars do. For the average consumer, it's a much enticing prospect to take a look at used cars instead of new cars.
Mainly, it's Matt. I was just wondering, did you see in this research the continuing shift away from passenger cars to SUVs, CUVs, truck-like vehicles, you know, that kind of thing?
Let me put it to you this way. Crossovers are number one choice at a variety of levels. We certainly find that a lot of dealerships are not particular about selling crossovers. Their margins are much less with crossovers. However, the OEMs are putting more emphasis on the crossover side. So yes, if you think about crossovers, SUVs, and larger vehicles seem to be a trend that's been going on for the last, let's say 3 to 5 years, maybe?
Yep.
And that continues even today.
And then it varies by the market. I was just sat in on a session last week with some auto dealers that the Association for Corporate Growth put on. And they were saying that in the Detroit market, used cars are not as well. Actually, new cars sell better than used cars in the Detroit market, but the rest of the country, it's like 3-to-1 used cars. So, I mean, there's so many variables that we're discovering in this. It's certainly not a monolith out there. You can't have one size fits all because each of the regions, and even sometimes within the regions, it's quite different.
Exactly. So in L.A., we're going to have a different response compared to San Francisco, compared to Miami, New York, or for that matter, Chicago. No question that the economies of each of these geographies make have an impact on the consumer, what type of car they're willing to buy, or what how much money they're willing to spend. Like I was just giving an example, because of context I have at Mercedes, in the Miami market, most of those dealerships are selling hundreds of vehicles per month, and they're single dealerships. In other words, they're not a group selling 400 luxury cars. It's just the one Mercedes dealerships are able to sustain a few hundred sales per month, and multiply that out by X number of Mercedes dealerships in and around the Miami area. And you can kind of get a sense that Mercedes has got a strong market over there, and therefore the geography and the consumers are more likely to spend money into the towards that luxury brand line.
And we should add, we got a little over 2 minutes left, and we got to slip that Audible commercial in. So we should add that we're also in talks right now. We've had three discussions with GM about working with them possibly. And then we're also talking to the folks at Ford and Chrysler. So to be determined where we're going forward on this, but who knows, right?
Yeah, we're based in the Motor City. We've been around in the Motor City since 87 in marketing and advertising. We've been a digital marketing agency since 1994. To that end, it made only sense to approach the OEMs in our own backyard. I believe we'll find Ford and Chrysler are probably more amenable to the Smart One program. GM, I was pleasantly surprised. You would think that after 2008 and the 2009 financial crisis, they would have lightened up on their bureaucratic system. However, what we found was the bureaucracy continues even today.
It does.
Apparently, Smart One doesn't meet a certain category. So,
yes, that's a whole other segment we could talk about.
Yes, the bureaucracy is forever.
It is. Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's tell people how they can find out more about Smart One, Mailing.
Yeah, first of all, we have a section for auto dealerships on our main website at smartfindmarketing.com. You'll find a section for auto dealers over there, and there's more information about Smart One as a subcomponent of that. Outside of that, Smart Finds Marketing is a digital marketing agency. We manage companies' entire web presence from their website to their marketing efforts, their advertising efforts, their customer relations, everything under that roof. After 25 years, we pretty much have all the competencies necessary to manage anything for a business.
All right. Thanks very much, Mailey Ostale of Smart Finds Marketing. We'll be back with another segment in just a moment. But first, we want to welcome a new sponsor to the M Squared TechCast. Thanks to Audible for this show. To start your free 30-day trial and to receive a free audiobook, visit www.audible.com/Detroit or text Detroit to 500-500. We're looking at through the cool Audible audiobooks just today and found one that sounds like a fun read for the science person in your life. It's by Neil deGrasse Tyson, the great science writer, and it's called Astrophysics for People in a Hurry, and it gets 4.6 out of 5 stars on Audible, so it must be pretty good.
Must be. We'll have to check it out.
All right. Thanks very much, and we'll be right back with another segment. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launch pad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And we have with us today Chuck Irvin, Director of Network Development at 123Net, one of our sponsors, and of course, Ihor Diachenko, Director of Marketing. Our crazy Ukrainian, yes.
Is there any other kind?
Yes. He was dancing when he came in, but now he's sitting in front of the microphone. So
absolutely. Thank you very much for actually having us back in again.
Yeah, no problem. Sure, I love it. So you guys are heavily involved with Detroit Internet Exchange. I believe you host it as well.
Yeah, that's correct.
And I just Ihor sent me some information last week that you're just hooked up with this company that gave you some new hardware, and it's going to make it even stronger than it was before, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're really excited about that. So back in 2014, 123Net launched the Detroit Internet Exchange. And creating the Internet Exchange was really the idea of Ryan Duda, who is the CTO at 123Net, and he's also somewhat of a networking genius. So he saw the need for an Internet Exchange here in Detroit, and assembled the initial members and kind of launched the exchange then. So you might ask, what is an internet exchange? And so we can talk about that for a second here. An internet exchange point is a physical location where internet service providers, hosting providers, content distribution networks, educational institutions, medium to large businesses can connect to each other and freely exchange traffic between their networks. So an internet exchange does for the internet kind of what an airport does for transportation. Huh. So you can envision many different transportation methods coming into an airport. Maybe you have an Uber, a taxi, a car, a bus, or a train, and planes. And similarly, with the internet exchange, you have different connectivity types coming to this exchange. The airport, of course, is moving people from one transportation type to another. And with the internet exchange, you're moving bits of data from one connection to another. So we launched the exchange, as I mentioned, back in 2014, and today it's grown to become the 14th largest internet exchange point in North America. Mm. So it's really been a tremendous growth story, probably one of the biggest stories in internet exchanges in the United States. We've got some awesome members today, Facebook, Amazon, Google, and Netflix, and you can check out the full list.
Oh, just those little companies.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's 30 members total. You can check out the list online at our website.
Now, is this the same as having a node directly on the internet like GM does out of Warren? Is that the same thing?
It's very similar. Connecting to these exchange points, they really are, the nodes where different networks interconnect with each other and share data. So it's very similar.
Hmm. Why is having an internet exchange a good thing for Detroit? I mean, don't we have big pipes here anyway, big internet service pipes?
Yeah, I think we've had big pipes for a long time, but the internet exchange kind of brings three massive benefits that we didn't have before. The first one is lowering the cost. So it's free to connect to the internet exchange, and all of the data that the members exchange between each other is at no cost. Compare that to a company that has to pay for their IP transit. We think that the average member is saving around $3,000 a month just by being a member of the internet exchange. So,
wow. So
lowering costs is a big thing, a big benefit of the exchange. The second big benefit is adding resiliency. So every time you interconnect with another member on the exchange, you're building a second connection from your network to their network.
Hmm.
And that actually becomes the primary connection where your traffic will travel, and your traditional internet pipe becomes a backup for that. So by adding another path, you're kind of adding some resiliency to the network.
So the network sort of senses that. Is it like AI or something that's being used or what?
Yeah, it actually it uses a protocol called BGP. Have you ever heard of BGP before?
I have not, no. Mm-hmm.
So BGP is pretty much the protocol that runs the internet.
Mm-hmm.
People don't really realize, I guess you've probably heard this before, the internet is a network of networks.
Right.
So all these networks, they use this protocol called BGP to talk to each other, share routes, and that's how they can correctly route a packet from, here in the podcast studios, say to Google.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of the third benefit is lowering latency. Have you guys ever heard of the trombone effect?
I know what latency is, but the trombone effect, no, I don't know what that is.
Does it have something to do with ping? Or?
Ping, very good.
You were in band once, right?
Yeah, right. Okay. French horn effect was my case.
Okay, all right.
So you can imagine the slide of a trombone kind of going out and coming back. So for example, let's say, you know, Google does appear at the Detroit Internet Exchange. They also appear at the Chicago Internet Exchange. Let's say that we're using a service provider here in the studio that isn't a member of the Detroit Internet Exchange, but instead is a member of the Chicago Internet Exchange. Our traffic to Google, if the Google traffic's originating in Detroit, we'd have to go all the way out to Chicago and, you know, through our provider and then back to Detroit to get Google's data, back to Chicago and then back here. So you can kind of imagine a trombone-like, you know, pipe out there and back. It contrasts that to, you know, a provider here. Say you have 123.net or a provider that's on the Internet Exchange. Your traffic can go directly to the Detroit Internet Exchange and to Google, kind of short piping, you know, that long trombone slide.
Hmm. Yeah, and the speed of light is fast, but it's not infinitely fast. And if you're talking about going thousands of miles, you do get a delay. I mean, you see it every time when you watch satellite news, you know, cable news operations, that some of those connections have a long 2 or 3 second satellite delay, and it gets kind of uncomfortable to watch a conversation that way.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You're exactly right. And, you know, by shortening that distance, you know, you're lowering that latency. And of course, every mile that you don't have to pass your data across is saving some costs. Somebody's paying to transport that mile. And then again, you're adding resiliency to your network with multiple connections.
So how much internet traffic flows through that exchange today? What are we looking at?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've been thinking about ways to kind of describe the amount of data that goes through the exchange. And one way to think about it is if you think about a YouTube video, say you're watching a YouTube video, the average throughput of that video is around 3/4 megabit per second. And the Detroit Internet Exchange peaks at around 40 gigabits per second. So a massive amount of capacity. You can actually watch 60,000 simultaneous YouTube videos at once. So if you think about Comerica Park, around 40,000 seats, fill that up with people, give them all smartphones and let them watch a YouTube video, and then fill up the Little Caesars Arena too of around 20,000 people, and you've got 60,000 people watching a video at once. You can really imagine.
Well, then each one are watching a different video, right?
Exactly, yeah. A different video. So you can see the tremendous amount of capacity that's there. So we originally launched the exchange, we had around 5 gigabits per second, and that's grown to 40 now. And that's, you know, why we're excited to partner with Arista to get this new switchgear, which actually has a capacity of 15 terabits per second. So we can really grow the exchange even more without upgrading our hardware further.
So what can one do with that much capacity? I mean, move intricate engineering drawings, things like that. You could move 3D video just about, right? Couldn't you, or something?
Yeah, you can move just about anything you'd want across that. We're excited to welcome our first school district to the Detroit Internet Exchange. So the St. Clair County School District is going to be joining the exchange here. We're excited to kind of get them connected just before September, you know, for school to start. And as you can imagine, all the traffic from all those schools in St. Clair County being offloaded, you know, on the exchange is going to save them a tremendous amount of money, make their connectivity faster and more resilient.
Any idea, any way to ballpark how much money you're going to be saving? Is there any way of quantifying that?
You know, in round numbers, if you took around $3,000 and multiplied that by the 30 or so members, you'd get about what we're saving today. Mm-hmm. But internet exchanges benefit from what's called, you know, what economists call the network effect. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine if I have a phone and I can only call Ihor over here, that's not super valuable. But if I add, you know, Mike, I can call three people on the phone, and every person you add to a phone network, it becomes more valuable. And that's kind of the network effect. And the internet exchange benefits from that same effect. The more people we add, the more traffic we'll be able to offload. So it's going to kind of snowball, and that value and the savings are going to continue to increase as we add members.
Interesting.
Okay, so who can join the Detroit Internet Exchange? Who should? Who would want to?
Yeah, that's a great question. So anyone who you know, we talked about the network of networks kind of that comprise that make up the internet, and anyone who's overseeing one of those networks could make the decision, hey, I want to bring my network to the Detroit Internet Exchange and start peering and freely exchanging traffic. Some great candidates for that are internet service providers, content distribution networks, hosting companies, data centers, school districts, universities and medium to large businesses. So they need to be running the BGP protocol. So anyone, you know, who's running that BGP protocol is a great fit. You don't have to have a presence in a 123.net data center today. We're actually in a couple other data centers as well, third-party data centers. And even if you're not in a data center, 123.net's got 3,500 miles of fiber here in Michigan and over 600 lit buildings. So we can connect your business to the exchange and help you get connected.
Huh. Interesting. So I guess, why didn't we have an exchange before 2014?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, many of the other larger cities have had exchanges for, you know, 20, sometimes more than that, 30 years. And Detroit kind of lagged behind a little bit. Somebody did try and launch an exchange. There was a company, Focal Communications, that tried to launch an exchange back in 2001. They eventually got acquired and kind of weren't able to get the exchange off the ground. And really, it wasn't kind of the right time. It was a little bit after the dot-com boom. There. And, you know, Detroit, I think after that was kind of historically speaking, from an internet connectivity perspective, in the shadows of larger cities like Chicago. But Detroit really is coming out of the shadows. And you can see that the renaissance in Detroit over the last, you know, 10 years, you can see what it's doing to the economy. And as you can imagine, it's doing the same thing to the internet demand here in Detroit. So it's kind of reached a tipping point where there was a ton of pent-up demand, mm-hmm. You know, for this exchange point. And when we created it, you can see that quick growth early on, you know, is kind of proof of that pent-up demand.
So what's the future hold for this? Where is the Detroit Internet Exchange headed? Where are we going with this?
So schools are definitely next. You know, there's tons of school districts around the state that we think could really benefit, you know, from joining the exchange. Dennis Buckmaster, who oversees the St. Clair County schools network, is kind of, you know, breaking the mold and pioneering this new type of school network that's going to, again, save them on costs, improve the resiliency and the latency of those networks. So we think a lot more schools and universities are going to join here in the coming years. We also think that mobility is going to play a key part in the future of the Internet Exchange. So mobility is a hot topic today, and for good reason. There's a lot of companies, you know, outside of just the big three automotive that are involved in it, and many of them need to connect together and share data. We've got a customer in a 123.net data center today that is storing and doing some data processing for four different companies that are all developing independent autonomous vehicles. And so they've got private connections to all those companies. And you can imagine if those were all instead connected to a peering fabric, how much of a benefit that would be for them to collaborate and share resources. So we really kind of envision mobility being a critical part of the future of the Detroit Internet Exchange.
Do you guys see yourself working with Merit? I know Merit does similar things, but of course it's a public entity rather than private.
Yeah, Merit is currently a member of the Detroit Internet Exchange.
Oh, it is. Okay.
And they do some peering on the exchange in a limited capacity. We'd love to see them continue to peer more on the Internet Exchange and continue to promote it and continue to kind of grow and push it amongst their members as well.
All right. I just had one question about Mr. Duda. Is he from Dearborn by any chance?
Originally, I don't know. Is he from Dearborn?
Okay, because I know a Duda family in Dearborn. That's where I live, so I was just sort of curious
big family,
about that.
So it's pretty extended.
Okay, gotcha. Well, I know that, you know, when you talk about educational institutions, there's one right near your office that I happen to be very familiar with.
That would probably be Lawrence Tech University. Yes,
indeed, it would. Yes. So, are you folks involved with LTU?
We do some business with them by proxy of a partner. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we do any direct business with them today. But we'd love to have them on the exchange. We'd love to have them join.
Gosh, if there's some way if we could reach out to Lawrence Tech, you know how that we could do that, man?
If there was only some way that we could.
Yeah,
how about that? Well, thanks very much. Chuck Irvin, Director of Network Development at 123.net. Ihor Diachenko, the Director of Marketing at 123.net. Thanks for visiting here today and telling us all about the Detroit Internet Exchange. Want to thank them and all of our guests today. We started out with Kathleen Norton-Schock of Diva Tech Talk and the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. Followed that up with cybersecurity expert Dan Lorman, a longtime cybersecurity guy for both the state of Michigan and the NSA, or no such agency as it used to be called.
That's right.
And Mike's And then Mike's tech guy, Maley Ostale, and his great business with car dealers and other folks.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, Chuck Irvin, director of network development at 123net. Great show today. I will be back in 3 weeks.
September,
Mike,
yes.
Yeah, Mike will be back next week.
See you in September.
Yes, indeed. And Mike will be back next week at 2 o'clock Eastern Time for another edition of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at PodcastDetroit.com.